This is Classic Rain 2. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. Let's blast into this report. Once these episodes are uploaded to the Classic Rain archive on therainreport.com, they'll remain on the opening screen until the next upload, scheduled for Labor Day weekend. Here in Classic Rain 2, we're going to travel back to February 1989, a time when the so-called Warp Bands 30, 17, and 12 meters were on the verge of becoming new HF spectrum to the U.S. amateur radio service. If you were licensed then, you may recall that you were anticipating the fun of operating 17 meters in its infancy. One Canadian who remembers was Bob Billings, VE1YX, from Bridgewater, Nova Scotia. Rain's founder, Hap Holly, KC9RP, spoke with Bob in 1988.
This is Rain Weekly Spotlight, January 31, 1989, a historic day in the annals of the U.S. Amateur Service. For that's the day the Federal Communications Commission released the long-awaited 17-meter band to stateside hams. Allocated to ham radio internationally back in 1979 as a result of WARC, the World Administrative Radio Conference, 18.068 to 18.168 megahertz, has been available to a number of countries in recent years, Canada for one. Bob Billings, VE1YX, from Bridgewater, Nova Scotia, has some thoughts and tips for newcomers to the 17-meter band.
Well, what a change in 17 meters today since the 31st of January at 0:00 GMT when U.S. amateurs first gained access to 17 meters. It's an entirely different world there now. There's QRM, which never existed before. You could be the loneliest man in the world on the band prior to that. Work at DX at your leisure and not have anyone break on your frequency or cause QRM in any way, shape, or form. But of course, January 31st has put a whole new complexion on the band. We've been having a lot more fun, I would say, since the 31st of January. A lot of good QSOs with stateside amateurs. Of course, the usual WAS effort is well underway by many. And also, you can tell there's a few DXers on the band as well. Everybody looking for the weak signal in between the strong QRM. And of course, the QRM is strong because of the common use of omnidirectional antennas rather than beam antennas and that sort of thing. There are a few of them around, of course, but they're not in the majority as far as popularity goes. My experience on the band started in November of 1988, so I'm a relative newcomer myself, even though Canadian amateurs had access to the band from approximately September of 1987. Already been able to accumulate about 68 countries on the band using Kenwood TS680S transceiver, which is mainly an HF transceiver, but also includes 6 meters. And I have a kilowatt amplifier. When I find I need it, it's easily switched on and a few more dB of signal is available. Use a very simple antenna, just a half-wave dipole at about 40 feet above ground level, suspended from the side of the tower that supports my 20-meter beam. I find there is some problems on the 17-meter band with people coming on from other frequencies and apparently tuning up various antennas and causing a bit of QRM in doing so, landing on QSOs and tuning with key down signals in lengths of time in excess of what would be reasonable in my mind anyway. I think a good operating tip for coming on 17 meters might be to go near the band edge where there's no QSO in progress, or at least make perfectly sure you're finding a clear frequency if you must tune up on the air and not using a dummy load. Make sure you're not causing anybody QRM, and actually it's a little more than just QRM. I've had entire QSO just wiped out by somebody persistently tuning and obviously not listening on the frequency they were tuning on. And also, when you're attempting to break in an existing QSO, just drop your call in very briefly and don't make a long dissertation. This upsets, of course, an ongoing QSO and forces one to make the other party repeat what they might have missed because of your long break-in. The natural progress of the band will go towards beam antennas, both of the Yagi design and the cubicle quad, that sort of thing. Right now, of course, is the predominant antenna, I believe, would be the 80-meter dipole through a tuner. A lot of 160 antennas being used and random length loops and wires and tri-banders. Tri-bander seems to be a popular one through a tuner. There seems to be a great number of varied antennas being used on the band, all with quite good success, I might add. I believe eventually the great amount of QRM that exists on the band since the U.S. has been on the band will settle down. Everybody will find their niche. Some will return back to 12 meters from where a lot of the activity is now coming. And others will return to 20 and 15 and so forth. There's no subbands, by the way, in Canada. We can operate single sideband from the bottom to the top of the band, 18068 through 18168. And I understand through contacts in the States that there is a single sideband CW division in the band, 18110 to 18168 being for SSB. The band starting point, 18068 through 18110 being CW and RTTY in that sort of mode. Early risers to the 17-meter band will find a quiet band, as when you get on in the morning, the inter-Canadian stateside QRM is not developed yet. And there might be a bit of DX. The rare weak signal might be available to the early riser. And propagation, I would say, is a blend of 20 meters and 15 meters. You have the long path propagation to ZL and VK, mostly through the middle of the day and through the afternoon as you would on 20 meters. And you have the short path into Europe in the morning hours, at least from an East Coast standpoint. And I suppose that also holds true to stations further west, of course, as their morning progresses, the same propagation appears, although over a longer distance.
You're listening to Classic Rain 2, a production of The Rain Report. This week featuring an interview with Canadian ham Bob Billings, VE1YX, of Bridgewater, Nova Scotia. We'll conclude our time with Bob VE1YX in a moment. Time for you to identify your station. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Classic Rain from www.therainreport.com.
An interesting aspect might be the PY2 Alpha Mike India beacon. This beacon is around 18.099. I might be off by a KC or so on the frequency of that beacon, but it shows also that the north-south propagation is enhanced in the afternoon and evening hours. Sometimes the beacon, which I believe runs 5 watts to an omnidirectional antenna, is not audible through the morning hours, and along in the afternoon it starts to appear from the noise, and by early evening hours it's sometimes up to 579 and a good propagation indicator. The low power, I think, is responsible for its not being heard at all in the morning time, because I have heard LUs, the Argentinian stations, coming through in the morning, and there's not a sign of the beacon. But it's an interesting propagation monitor and gives a good indication when you can expect the best signals from that part of South America. The afternoon hours, of course, the propagation moves west, as it does with, say, 15 meters. The stations on the west coast come into us here in the east much better. I have had occasion to work into Victor Kilo land, into Australia, and that seems to be a multi-assortment of paths used in that particular part of the world. I've worked to Victor Kilo 6 at 1200 GMT, and also in the evening hours on what apparently is the short path. When you get into the later hours of the evening, the VK7s and Victor Kilo 2s, VK4s, of course, come through that way, and also ZL at the same time. There is a path to ZL also around midday at this local QTH. I heard a ZL1 being worked at, I believe it was around 1600 GMT. I'm not quite sure what path that was, but I think an interesting propagation study, the 18 megahertz band, is indeed. And I think a lot of learning will be had by all that are interested in that sort of thing through the next few years, especially till the operator gets a handle on what particular time to look for what part of the world, let's say. That's a bit of my reflections on the band. I've been having a great time, especially in the last few days with the U.S. amateurs. Prior to the U.S. attaining the band, it was quite quiet. You could feel very easily like the Maytag repairman, the loneliest man in town.
Bob Billings, VE1YX, with his Canadian perspective of the 17-meter amateur band, released to the U.S. Amateur Service January 31, 1989. CW and digital modes, AMTOR, Packet, and the like, are permitted from 18.068 to 18.110 MHz, and so-called analog modes, SOS and fax and single sideband, are permitted from 18.110 to 18.168 MHz, and you must be a general class licensee or higher to use it. Enjoy! I'm Hap Holly, KC9RP in Chicago.
And those were some of the ins and outs of the 17-meter warp band as experienced by Bob Billings, VE1YX, of Bridgewater, Nova Scotia, 30 years ago when the FCC allocated 17-meter spectrum to the U.S. Amateur Radio Service January 31, 1989. The Classic Rain episodes are updated bi-weekly on therainreport.com and are heard on this repeater. Classic Rain is copyright from when the Earth's crust was cooling to 2019 Rain. All rights are reserved. We'll return Labor Day weekend with Classic Rain 3. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. Keep on hamming.